You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production on the Bucks Plus Network.
Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
All right, welcome to Here District, the fantastic voyage as we follow the exploits of the Milwaukee Bucks. I'm the captain of this vessel, Marcus Johnson. My son, Chris, is my first mate, holding it down.
Well, sad.
And we have a cult hero in the city of Milwaukee. You know, whenever they want to get the crowd juiced up, they fly this guy in town. They put him courtside.
Yes, sir.
And just let him go to work. And the fans love him and we love him. And this is actually a second time on the show. And Brad, we thank you for joining us once again. Brandon Jennings. Brandon, welcome to the Here District, man.
Nah, man. Thank you, man. Thank you guys for having me.
We appreciate you coming back.
Love all of you here.
Yes, yeah, sir. Yeah. So listen, we're all LA guys here. And there's a term that transcends time, space, energy, eras. This term, soft. It's been around forever. And it kind of denotes, you know, I don't know, what does it mean? Well, first of all, let's just Brandon, what does that mean to you? Just when you say someone's soft, what does that mean? Without getting specific with names, we'll get to that later. But just that overall term, soft, what does that mean?
Kind of like nonchalant a little bit. I mean, you can still be great at what you do. It's just more of like, you know, kind of don't care too much, or it's not as aggressive.
Not as aggressive. Chris, soft?
Well, soft for me would be in a sense of a weakness mentally, where you don't like the physical part of the game. When the game gets tight, you know, you don't have the intestinal fortitude to, you know, knock down the shots and make the plays to help your team win in the basketball context. That's kind of in that wheelhouse of stuff for me is what it means.
Okay, so I'm going to set this up. I'm going to recite a little thing that I wrote a long time ago, then I'm going to give you some background on it, then I'm going to ask you a question about it.
Okay.
So it's out of my hands. No control, no say. Acquiesce to someone's demands. It's out of my hands. Rule of thumb is to act real dumb and pretend there's nothing wrong. But if your senses are real and your mind's intact, it's kind of hard to go along. It's out of my hands. You acquiesce to someone's demand. You play the game, you perform the role, and then you try real hard not to console yourself too long after you're through. Because it's not really a test of a man, but only when the scale is grand, you find who's really who. See, it's out of my hands. Now, I'm playing against Larry Bird. I'm playing him physical, bumping him, denying him. He's getting all pissed off about it. He's complaining. He turns to the referee, Jess Kersey, this redhead ref back in the early 80s, and says, "Get him off me, Red. Get him off me." Now, Jess Kersey, the referee, Brandon, Chris, he calls two fouls on me in a matter of a minute. Just bink, bink. I go to the bench. All right. I'm so pissed off, frustrated, you know, just like, and this is like kind of before Larry Bird was really Larry Bird, you know, so I'm thinking racism and all these other things. How can they let this guy dictate who can stay on the floor? So I go back to my room and I write this poem. It's out of my hands. No control, no say. It's out of my hands. Who was soft in that instance? Larry Bird for complaining? Or me for going back to my room and writing a poem about it? And an exercise of my creative outlet.
I'll let Brandon answer that.
Who would be soft in that instance, Brandon? And I be real with me. I'm just curious.
I mean, I'm not writing those whole.
Okay.
Oh, shit.
I mean, he used it as a tactic. Hey, get him off me, Red. I'm trying to win.
Get him off me, Red. Get him off me.
That's the only way.
Yeah, Chris.
Come on, man. You were soft, dog. I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, just keep it at 100. Go home and write a poem about that. Like, I understand you're a creator, and I understand you got those creative juices, those creative genes, but in that particular instance, Larry Bird is just using the tools that he has in front of him, which is the referee, right, to get you off of him, get you out the game. You did not use no tools. You didn't say nothing. You didn't do nothing. You went home and wrote about this shit.
Well, understand the context
out of
the
my
time.
Hands, like you back in the 70s, like you know.
It's in the 80s. It's in the early 80s. It's out of my hands.
You got rhythm though.
But the point of the poem, the point of the poem was like, it was a way for me to decompress. See,
okay,
a way for me to not get so caught up and wound up in the resentment and the bitterness and the anger that I'd do something crazy.
Okay,
so I just needed a creative outlet just to get that out of me. And the final line of the poem is only when the scale is grand. So like, don't get caught up in all this bullcrap. Don't let this get me off my square, as you would say nowadays. So it was the point of going to write about it.
But did you say it publicly?
Huh? No, I finally shared it. This is back in the early 80s. I may have shared it like 5 years ago for the first time, but I just kept it to myself. It was just straight for me just as a way to bend. I wasn't trying.
You got to write that, share that the next day. Let them know.
Go to the media.
It was a different era. You know, it's a different era. Today, that would be right on point. Now, to segue from that into, we talking Saw, we talking Celtics. Brandon, you've been in the news a lot lately. Different social media have been used. You made a comment about Jason Tatum. And you said that he was the softest Celtic superstar in history.
Yeah.
Or something to that effect.
Yeah.
Give us some context. Why'd you say that when you said it? What did you mean exactly when you said it? Do you still stand by it, more importantly?
I definitely stand by it. Like I said before, May and June is coming. And I think the overall picture of everything I'm saying is this, just the fact that Jaylen Brown has a finals MVP and a MVP of the playoffs. So that's where the context came from. And I'm going to just wait till May and June.
So you're saying, when you bring up Jaylen Brown, finals MVP last year, dominant player, a lot of people out here. My good buddy Lorenzo Romar, his brother, who has a little column he writes for Facebook. Mm-hmm. We've been going back and forth. Chris doesn't like me to give him any kind of recognition at all, but he says that he's the best player of the two.
Okay.
Between Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Now, what do you guys feel about that? Can you really make that? Can you discern who's better? Are they so even that it's hard to say who's better? Or do you have an opinion on that?
I just feel like, you know, when you say the best, like when Shaq was running those rings with Kobe, you know, it was very, you know, obvious who was the greatest, who was the best player. You know, when KD went to the Warriors, it was very obvious who was the best player. When LeBron James is going to the finals, it just is very obvious who was the best player. So just in this situation, I really don't know who's the best player. Because one has everything that, you know, to be the best player on the team, that's what you want. Is that finals MVP. And, you know, as Giannis would say, whoever wins the finals MVP is the best player in the league. So, that also came from another NBA player.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. Now, what I would combat with that, we're talking Celtics again. So early 80s, I think 81 or so, Celtics win the championship, beat the Houston Rockets in the finals. And Larry Bird had a really great final series, but there was a teammate of his by the name of Cedric Cornbread Maxwell.
They talked about it on the show.
He was finals MVP of that one series. Andre Iguodala was a finals MVP with Golden State of that one series. I mean, that's where I come with it, because Jason Tatum, I mean, you just from sheer numbers, and I know we don't like to measure players completely on sheer numbers, but sometimes, I mean, that's a pretty solid barometer, but it's also an appreciation at his age, 26, 27 years old, whatever he's done. But he's got, you know, career averages, man, where he's been just the model of consistency, putting up 25, 26, 27 points a game, and his field goal percentage, his three-point percentage has gone up, and all those good numbers. I don't know. Yeah. I guess what I'm trying to say is
when Bird lost that finals MVP, did he already have a MVP of the NBA?
I don't think so. That's a good question. I don't think he had won one yet. I think that didn't happen until,
because he won three in a row, right?
He won three in a row, but I thought that was more mid-80s. We'd have to, Modus can check that stat out, but I don't think it was early as 1981. Because see, this is what happened. Bird came to the league in 1979,
right?
1980. Yeah. I was first T-ball pro, Brandon.
Okay.
1979, when the players voted. Okay. Going into that season, going into Bird's rookie year, like the league was, you know, 99% black, cocaine abuse, all this going on. They needed something. They needed that white superstar, Great White Hope, they called it back in those days. The Bucks drafted one, and Kent Benson, same year I got drafted three, he got drafted one, didn't pan out, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so Bird was first team all pro 1980, his rookie year, one of the few rookies to be first team all pro. I had been first team all pro the year before when the players vote.
Yeah.
They took the vote out of the players' hands, Bird's rookie year, and gave it to the media.
That's cold, bro.
My coach, Don Nelson, who was a former Boston Celtic,
voted for Bird.
Came to me and said, instead of averaging 26 points a game like you did your second year when you was first team all pro, give me 20 points a game. And so I averaged 20, 21 points a game. Got bumped off the first team all pro by Larry Bird on a vote based by the media. So I don't think at that point, Larry would be the first to admit, when we got chosen for the All-Star game as a rookie that year, or early in his career in Cleveland or somewhere, he said even then that he wasn't one of the best forwards in the league. He was just happy that he was acknowledged as an All-Star, blah, blah, blah. But that year that he made first team all pro, I got bumped off first team from the year before. And Adrian Dantley averaged 28 points a game, y'all, and didn't make an all pro team as a forward, as a small forward. So it's a different era. So my point is this. Let's get back to Jason Tatum. And it actually spilled over into his skill development guy, Drew Hammond.
Yeah.
Have you and Drew been going back and forth? What's the nature of this beef that's going on?
So you know what's crazy? So, on the show on Gil's Arena, a lot of our takes, like some of them don't go like viral until like maybe 2 weeks or 3 weeks later. So the whole Jason thing is, we had said it. We had said it like maybe like 2 weeks or 3 weeks ago before the new year. So we kind of I kind of forgot all about it. So then when the Drew thing came up, it just came out of nowhere. And I was just like, all right, so I just played into it a little bit. I gave it a little moment. But it's nothing like that. I mean, it's nothing like that, though. This all hoop talk.
Yeah. I know I made a comment about, who was that, Chris? Tyrese Halliburton or something. Just kind of a throwaway comment during a broadcast. Just joking, really. And it got back to him, and he reached out to Josiah, through his people. Like, what's up with your dad, man? What's up with your dad? Is that soft? Would that be soft? I'm just curious. We call that soft? No, I'm just kidding. But he reached out to Josiah. I don't know. So, this social media thing, man.
It's crazy now because now the whole word soft is like, it's like when somebody make a rap song or somebody make a beat and they got the momentum. It's like, all right, now we got to figure out who's all soft. Now LA guys are soft I'm soft. So now it's just like, now it's this whole definition of what the word soft is. So now it's like the biggest thing in 2025.
It predates you. It predates, I'm sure it's probably predates my era, but I remember I'm writing a book about Crenshaw High School greats, and Stephen Thompson was one of the guys I talked to. And when he went from Crenshaw back to Syracuse, he told me Derek Coleman and all those East Coast, Midwest guys, they went, oh, here come this soft LA P word, on. And then so now you got to go out there and prove yourself. I mean, I think you shared some of that. I heard you talk about that too, man. I mean, just what is it about LA, man? One of the toughest guys I know is Reggie Theus. Now you look at him, pretty boy, blah blah blah, handsome guy. You wouldn't think that, but this guy will. He'll fight anybody on anywhere, anytime. I mean, but I don't know. What is it about LA guys, man, that they want to put that moniker on us so quickly?
I think it's the palm trees, man.
Yeah.
I think it's the palm trees and the beach. But I was just having a conversation with my boy the other day. I'm like, man, I remember being 11 years old, going to Brooklyn, playing the South Coast All-Stars with Scott McClain. And I think me, DeMar, Malik Story was on this team. And we're playing against Lance Stevenson, Urban Walker. We was in Brooklyn. Yeah. And they was calling us soft and all this. And then at the end of the day, we won the tournament.
Yeah.
That's to be the crazy part about it. Like, we soft, but SEA, we used to go through, everything AAU and win, or I go to Oak Hill. And it's just, I just find it funny that, California is known as being soft. And then at the end, it's like, we leaving with the trophy, or we the best player there.
Yeah. It's a big kind of conception of the type of dudes that are out here. I think they conflate, Mr. B, they conflate like the beaches, the sun, like that lifestyle with like the hoopers. Like, it's two different things.
Yeah.
Like the hoop game is a completely different thing than what these guys that live in, New York are looking at. Oh, palm trees and y'all got beaches with pretty women. But it's like, nah, dudes really be working on their game out here. Because I know when we went to the Boston Shootout in 1994, we beat team Boston in the Boston Garden to win it.
Like, doing we smacking. We like, we go out of town, we smacking y'all. Like,
who that? That was you, Toby Bailey, J. Hart,
Miles Simon,
Cameron Murray. Yeah. See,
Tremaine Folks. Yeah.
I don't even know why, but that's just the algorithm of it. Like, you know.
Yeah,
now,
man.
So you know what I'm saying? So now everybody's trying to figure out who the softest, and then you know what's gonna come next? Who the softest city or who the softest hooper?
Yeah.
Like Ben Day, we got the most hoopers in the NBA.
Easily.
Who else? LA? Are you saying the Southern Cal? Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. I knew that was true at one point. I didn't know it was still. And so that brings me to the next thing in terms of stylistically. So you think of New York guards in particular, and you know, with the Sham God and then all the handle and this and that and Pearl Washington and blah blah. You think of Chicago, they've got some really tough point guards and Tim Hardaway and then that D Rose and all that. I mean, what would you say, Brandon, if you had to put a handle on kind of the style of LA ball basketball players, how would you define that? Is it, or can you define it? Is it just so versatile that you can't define it?
I think us, it's just like our way of living. Like, if you come to LA, right, as long as you don't bother us, we ain't gonna bother you. Like, once you start chapping, once you start saying type of stuff to us, then, you know, it's on. Like, we're gonna turn it up, like NWA or like broken gang violence. Like, how can we, like, you know, I know our pretty, or, you know, we might be pretty boys with the curls and all that, but that ain't got nothing to do with when it's time to get a crack kick.
Wow, man. And you just touched a nerve. And just quickly, Chris, because I was, you know, I kept to myself. I was quiet. I didn't do a lot of trash talking. Like, people always say, like, well, give me some trash talking story between you and Larry Bird. They wasn't that. I didn't talk trash to Dominique, Bernard, King, none of them. I just went out and tried to serve them. And they never scored 30. Bird might have scored 30 once, Bernard maybe once in all the times we met. But it was all about, you know, as Sidney Wicks used to always tell me, another great West Coast player from Hamilton High School, UCLA, used to say, let your game do the talking.
Yeah,
you know, man. And that was kind of the attitude that I had. But Chris, go ahead, talk about what you're going to talk about.
No, but I was going to comment. I was going to comment on just the uniqueness stylistically of LA Hoopers. Let's take B. Jennings and let's take Baron Davis. Those are like two guys that have a style that isn't associated with being from Los Angeles. Like your game, B, you like a New York Southern, like you got like all kind of dudes for me. Personally, from what I've seen, and Baron, from what I've seen out of those two, like they got, like, it's almost as if your journey in basketball, you played against so many cats from around the country that you pick up pieces from different tournaments. Is that true, Brandon?
Yeah.
Who are some guys that you competed against coming up along the way? Like, who are your counterparts?
Or even looked up to watching, love to watch on TV.
Yes, especially, I mean, well, especially here, I'm going to go with, when we're talking LA, I'm talking Wesley Stokes.
Yeah,
I'm talking Marcus Williams.
Yeah,
I'm talking Fu Jetter.
Yeah,
Cardina,
Fortson. That you know that I remember.
And
then we go to the East Coast. You know, DeJuan Wagner, Sebastian Telfair. I went against Johnny Flynn, Corey Fisher.
Oh yeah,
you know, just a bunch of guys. So and then being young, I remember Pat Barrett. Rest in peace, Pat Barrett. I remember he used to have Ocean View. Popping and going against Jordan Farmer, Aaron Afalo, and Josh Shipp and all these guys. So it's always been a playing against older guys, or, you know, Kenny Anderson too. Oh, Kenny Anderson was my favorite growing up.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. I can see that. I mean, the quick left there. And you mentioned Sebastian Telfair. Just a quick synopsis. How good was he? How was he all that?
I mean, to me, through the fire, you know, when that first dropped, you know, I'm thinking I'm about to be a freshman in high school. So seeing that, you know, that changed my life. That made me want to wake up every morning and go work out. And, you know, just seeing his journey was like, you know, that was very inspiring at that time.
Through the fire. I'm not familiar with that. What is that? That's
documentary.
A documentary on Sebastian Telfair?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So you taught old school something that he didn't know. So I need to check that out then.
Yeah. No question.
That's a top. So, okay. All right, man. But so let's talk about, the Milwaukee Bucks.
Yeah, man. Let's see.
In this context, man. And first of all, what did you say? You said vibes don't lie. I love that saying. Vibes don't lie. What kind of vibes are you feeling, seeing from this current Bucks team right now?
Well, we started the way we started wasn't good. You know, we picked it up for the in-season tournament, which to me, I think the in-season tournament, when the in-season tournament is a curse. I'm just going to say that, just throw it out there. So that shouldn't be something that people should be trying to pay for anymore. But we wanted this year, we'll take it.
Yeah.
But moving forward, and then, you know, just getting Chris Middleton back, You know, just working through that. But the season just in general has been kind of, you know, kind of up and down just with everything. So I think if we can finish strong going into the All-Star weekend and then come out of there, you know, attacking and hopefully, you know, get Chris Middleton back in the rhythm that we used to have him in. And then we'll see what happens.
How do you think Dame and Giannis have been working out together? Like, how do you think their pairing has been going recently?
I mean, to me, honestly, I think they're just two of the best players in the league, and they're just figuring it out.
And when you say figuring it out, like as a former league guy, like explain to our audience what that means, like as far as getting in the weeds of it, the nuances of figuring it out.
Well, do you see a lot of pick and roll action with them?
No. Do we? I mean,
is it increasing?
We're starting to see more. Starting to see a lot more.
Yeah. So I think that should just be like one of the biggest things, their pick and roll option playing together. You know, I would love to see a situation where it's Dame coming down, Giannis is at the elbow, and then you have Chris Middleton in the corner, and they're running this three guard action, and you got Dirty Bird over here on the side on the other corner, and then you got Brooke in the corner over there, like something like that with some movement, and then with that action they'll be able to exchange each other. They can all, you know. I don't know.
It's actually Dairy Bird, but you might have
Dirty Bird, baby.
Yeah, you might be on to something. Dirty Bird.
Yeah. Dirty Bird in that corner. Man, listen, when Dirty Bird out, find him. You gotta find him.
Yes, you do.
He is not playing.
Yeah. No, he's come on. I mean, just a guy. Was he drafted? I don't know. I don't think he was even drafted. Kind of a free agent out of Northern Iowa, and he's really been huge for this team. Now, you talked about Chris Middleton. There's been a lot of scuttlebutt on Twitter with Milwaukee Buck fans, Brandon, that, and he's just, I don't know, a few games in, maybe a half a dozen, maybe a dozen or so. I don't know how long it's been since he's been back. But Doc is bringing him off the bench right now. Mm-hmm. And Doc's talking about how, you know, some nights he looks great, some nights not so great. So we just want to kind of help him slow down a little bit and really kind of monitor his minutes. But there's a lot of Milwaukee fans are saying, like, well, he probably is better suited at this stage of his career at 32, 33 years old to come off the bench. I mean, what do you feel about that?
Milwaukee is good enough to get to the playoffs. So that's not the problem. Like, that's not the problem. Like, Dame and Giannis can get them to the playoffs, you know. The whole thing is about being healthy, seeing if Chris Middleton is in the right vibes, in the right mood. Coming off the bench, I mean, that means you get all the shots. You know, you can come down and, you know, get in your rhythm. I think with him being hurt, not playing, I think this is a good situation for him right now. Like I said, we could see all the way to All-Star break and then just see what happens.
Yeah, right, psychologically. You're not worried about psychologically how, I mean, is that, as a player, do you think that's going to mess with his head at the end? I don't know.
To be able to, you know, coming back from injury, I think the biggest thing is just getting back on the court. You know, like at the end of the day, like I said, Milwaukee, they're going to get to the playoffs regardless. Like Giannis and Dame, they're going to make sure that happens. I think now it's just Middleton finding his vibe and his rhythm. Where's to say if he starts, you know, in the second half of the season?
Yeah.
You know, so like I said, right now, let's just take a time, like, you know, get some shots and, you know, let's see what happens in the second half.
And do you think that this, like the way the current rotation is going out in Milwaukee with, you know, the top 8 or 9 guys, you think that that's going to be sustainable, like when later on down the road when they meet Boston? Like, is that going to be like, is this iteration of the Bucks able to beat the Celtics in the 7-game series? Or do guys need to play more? Or Knicks,
Cavs. Yeah, I got you.
But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I mean, it just depends on where we at. Depends on how healthy we are. Depends on who's making shots. You know, like I said, Dirty Bird gonna need that ball too. We're gonna have to find him.
Would you start AJ? Bring Ajax in, his energy off
Andre
the bench.
Andre Jackson Jr. off the bench, start AJ. Just from an offensive standpoint, you're saying, Chris?
Yeah, I like Jackson Jr.
Me too.
Why you like him, B?
Because he just, he hostile. Like he hostile, he a dog, and like he'll run through the wall for you, I feel.
Yeah. Sets the tone, yeah.
And I think him like him starting and just being that dog early, like, you know, taking the pressure off Dame and all, and just being able to be out there, like, just causing havoc. I think he's a good, you know, option. He just got to shoot the ball.
Yeah. And he kind of fills that profile too, Brad. We're talking about kind of the LA pretty boy guy and all that. Good looking guy. But I don't know if you saw, he slapped somebody with a backhand.
He always beef.
But he got ejected that game.
He's always beef.
And I love it. I can't say it on the air.
But that's what you need in the playoffs. Like those moments like that in the playoffs, yeah. Or like, you know, like when you have to meet Boston later on this year or whoever guy plays, like, yeah. Set the tone.
Yeah.
Hey, we need you to set the tone for us.
Yeah. For sure.
You know, and I think that's going to be the thing. Like, who's going to set the tone for the Bucks? We know Giannis is, but, you know, who's going to be that second, third guy that's going to, you know, we know Dame's going to do what he can do, but who's going to be that third guy that's going to set that tone?
Mm. And do you think... So I'm thinking back to that championship season and the key that we all know is a big key, picking up P.J. Tucker, talking about a dog. You know, he's not going to give you more than 8 to 10 points a game on a good night. But that energy that he brought, do you think the Bucks have enough of that as currently constituted, Bobby Portis? I mean, you think they got enough of that, or do they – is that an area that if you were running the show, calling the shots for this team, that you would look to kind of beef up a little bit?
Yeah, the Nationals will be on the bench.
Yeah. Wow.
That's a fact. That's who will be on the bench for sure. Just because at the end of the day, I know what he's going to bring every day.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying? That 15th man or whatever, that 12th man, whatever, him being on that bench is just the energy that we need.
He's seeing
stuff. He talking. He coaching too at the same time.
Facts.
So it's just like, it'd be those little things that to where, like when you're going through the season and, you know, you're having a rough 5 games or whatever, guess who's going to be in there still going crazy? Guess who's going to be in there, you know, getting guys hyped?
Why is there value in that? Is there anybody you could think of that did that for you, a seldom playing guy that really gave you that, like, just every time you looked at him and then you talked to him and you saw what they were doing on the bench, that kind of gave you that energy that you maybe needed to kind of get you going a little bit?
Yeah. Kurt Thomas, my rookie year. Kyle Quinn.
Okay.
You know, yeah. You know, I like Kyle Quinn, Marquise Daniels.
You know what I'm saying?
Like if I was playing, you know, he'd be like, all right, hey, yo, that young boy say he gonna bust your ass tonight or whatever. Like, you know, but yeah, that does, because it's just, I mean, you're already pumped to get going, but it's just that extra, like, you know, it's all you got.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. And look, man, we can't let you go without broaching this topic. You said that Chris Middleton was the best small forward, I think you said, in Milwaukee Bucks history. What do you base that on, Brandon?
I base that on 50 years, you know, waiting to win a championship. I base that on his play, for what I've seen. And this is just on my opinion of what I've seen. You know, his play was huge in a bunch of games for the Bucks during that playoff run, hitting a lot of big shots, you know, putting the team on his back. And I just think, you know, waiting 50 years and being a part of that. And also he came here off a trade off me, and I never thought, you know, they're somebody from my ass.
Wow. That's right. I forgot about that. Yeah.
That's crazy.
So, I got to throw that in there. But yeah, you know, that's why.
Fair. Yeah, well, obviously I mentioned that because then I think just somebody might have sprang to my defense and all that. But let me just say this. So Bobby Dandridge, I don't know how much you know about Bobby D, but he was, you know, I think he led the league or something in playoff points in the 70s or something like that. But with the Bucks, he was really, really integral in terms of their championship run. Great small forward. But, man, look, Chris Middleton, I have no problem with that because I'm one of his biggest fans, Brandon. When I first got to Milwaukee 10 years ago, he was in about his second or third year. Tim Gergerich, the assistant coach for Jason Kidd. I need you to talk to Chris. I'm like, about what, Gerg? He's like, he just confidence. He doesn't have any confidence. Talk to him and saw that he did have confidence. He was just quiet. We talk about that West Coast kind of mentality, you know, just let your game do the talking. But, man, after experiencing what he did in that championship run when Giannis went down, I guess the Atlanta Hawks, Miami or somebody hit a jumper, you know, Indiana last year. He averaged, what, 25, 26 points a game?
Off one leg,
coming back hurt. And that's why I'm just so hopeful that that he'll get it back. And, you know, if he – and my thing is this, too, if he does it, he's still done enough. You know what I mean? If he's never an all-star again, never averages close to 20 again, never averages close to 90, 50, 40, or whatever it is.
Damn.
I just think he's still done enough to have established his legacy. You know, maybe not as the best forward in Milwaukee Bucks history. No. But he's done enough to establish his legacy, right? I mean, right? He's done enough.
No,
what do you guys think?
No, for sure. From a guy who went to Detroit, got traded, was trying to find his way, and then, you know, was able to play with Giannis, and they was able to work it out, go through all the steps that it took to keep going until you became a champion. Man, you got to roll with it. I mean, that's what I've seen in my ear and in my eyes. And I was just like, yo, this is pretty special.
Okay. So now we're going to segue to a quick segment. We got you for a few more minutes. So we got this segment we call About That Action. Pull up a couple of clips. This is what I liked about the Buck game the last time they played. Dame Lillard going against Orlando Magic. I mean, just kept it run that again. I mean, Dame has been turning the ball over more than he has at any point in his career, 11.7% turnover percentage. But Brandon, you know, he's a scorer. And so for me, it's like, man, when in doubt, just attack. And right here, what are you seeing from Dame on some of these plays that you like? Just walk us through your guard mentality.
Well, he's being aggressive for sure. And you know, this is the Dame that's in Portland, you know, to me. You know, I wish he would have set that pick on that first one. But this is just Dame just creating him and being able to be Dame.
Yeah. Yeah. And then he wound up pulling up for like a 35-footer in this game also. Go ahead, Chris. You got something?
No, go ahead.
No, just in terms of, I'm trying to think. So Dame is 34. Did you see Dame at all in your career, Brandon? Or did you guys cross paths?
Oh, yeah, we crossed paths.
Okay. So I'm just trying to get the chronology straight. What was that like?
I mean, it was some good bump. I mean, I've had some good games.
Yeah.
You know, I had some good games in Portland in that Milwaukee Bucks red jersey.
Oh, really?
Was there one thing in particular you felt like you could go to that was pretty constant whenever y'all, you know, usually against somebody, you know, you play against, there's one thing I could do. I know I'm going to be able to get to my spot, get my shot off. But there's something you could do against him?
My step back going to the right is lethal. So can't nobody stop that. I don't care how good you are.
Facts. Yeah. Then on the other side, what was it about his game that maybe gave you some challenges defensively?
The fact that it was the scoring guards. It was just the fact that, you know, that was that wave of, you know, that was that, he was that Gilbert Arenas type guard. Like every time he got it, it was going up or it was a threat. When I first came into the league, me scoring 55 or was scoring like that was looked at, like guys like, damn, like he's a scoring guard. Like you gotta, you know, I was going against, you know, Steve Nash and, you know, the guard play wasn't like it is today.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, seeing Dame and doing all that, it was like, all right, like, good luck tonight.
Is that something you feel like he needs to do though? Just staying aggressive and there's a couple of situations late game, him and Giannis got miscommunicated. Turnover, he and Bobby Portis. My thing, man, is like, dude, when in doubt, you know, find your shot. You're good enough to find your shot pretty much in any situation. Either step back, use your quickness to blow by the deep 30, 35 footer. I mean, what are you seeing in him that you think he could do to help this team a little bit better?
No, I think it's just still learning. I mean, you know, like now he has an actual chance to win a championship, right? So you have to like know everybody's positions. You got to know where guys are on the floor and things like that. So I think he's still just, but like I said, right now, like it's more of like, you know, just getting where you are in towards the end of the season, you know, getting your seed, and then, you know, just attack the playoffs again. Because I think this year with Chris Middleton coming back and now they're all healthy. I think that's the biggest thing. If they're all healthy,
right?
Listen, this thing can go any type of way. I think that's just the biggest thing. Like they're going to cruise, they're going to cruise through because they're good. Right. Giannis and Dame, they're good enough. But I think once that playoffs come, it's going to get to another level.
Yeah, I feel that same way too, man. Well, look, man, we appreciate you coming back for the second time around with us, man. And what you got to go? Anything you want to talk about to throw out there? Tough crowd, what's going on?
Nah, I'll be in an All-Star weekend for sure. You know, I'm trying to get to Milwaukee soon, so I think I'm going to come out to Milwaukee to do a podcast out there. So nice. Might be out there in March and April. So, and then for sure, playoffs, you know, we get Boston, you know what time.
front row center, man. We appreciate you, man. Thanks a lot. Brandon Jennings, Mr. B, Yos Arena, Milwaukee Buck icon. Thank you, man. We appreciate you coming by.
All right, y'all.
All right, man. Thank you. All right, here, District. Captain of this vessel, Marcus Johnson, son, Chris. Want to thank Brandon Jennings, Mr. B.
Mr. B.
He's established a new nickname for AJ Green, Dairy Bird, a.k.a.
Dirty Bird.
Dirty Bird. Put Dirty Bird in that corner over there, man.
The Dirty Bird, man.
I like that. Now, we got a couple more about that action plays that we want to look at. And one that we've looked at earlier, but Chris, you got some insights into some things that you saw.
No, I just wanted to point out just the scheme the Bucks ran, the action in on this play after Andre Jackson sets the screen right here to get his man. Now, that triggers a reaction from the other two defenders that are within Dame's area. You'll see as we continue the video, Brooke now is going to clear a little bit, and that's going to keep, who's that, Wendell Carter Jr. in the middle. You see how Wendell Carter Jr. kind of gets caught in no man's land?
Ben Carroll, that's
Paolo. Excuse me, that's Paolo. But Paolo gets confused because Brooke clears spaces out to the three. So watch it. He's going to stay there. He's like, and he doesn't know what to do. And that's a little bit of laziness, too.
Well, what's really interesting is that Paolo started on Andre Jackson Jr. He started on the non-score, so he didn't have to waste any energy playing defense. So the Bucks do a good job. Now they've got, that's Da Silva, Tristan Da Silva, switching on to Dame. And, man, Dame's got this ability, Chris. He's got these afterburners. Like when he gets a shoulder by a defender in space, he's able to accelerate enough to create even more separation, man, which is why he gets so many layups like this at the rim that don't get blocked.
No, yeah, and he does a good job of finishing with like keeping the ball away from the defender too when he gets underneath there.
Yeah, either left hand, right hand going to the opposite side, he's got all that. So now let's look at a couple of defensive plays. I really like the Bucks defense on Paolo Banchero. Now watch this. This is like, now you may say, well, what's that about? Well, first of all, Dirty Bird does a great job of just fighting. Okay, he's going to dribble to his left, rip through, Dirty Bird cuts him off. But Giannis, that help, just being focused into that help. You know, as a shooter, Chris, when you see a big 7 foot, 7'5" wingspan type dude like Giannis coming over, even though he's late, that impacts your shot. Am I correct?
Yeah, no, it does. I mean, it's like running interference, putting a hand up, you know, creating obstacles so that it obstructs the shooter's vision. And that was a great job. And that's what I meant when we talk about MJ, second and third efforts defensively. Giannis could have just chilled out, hung out around the foul line, waited for the rebound to carry him off the rim. But instead, he goes and makes a play. And that's championship efforts.
And against the guy. Now, you don't do that against everybody. If that's Wendell Carter Jr., no, you don't do that.
He recognizes who's on who.
That's Ben Carroll with a sizable advantage in that matchup. Ryan Rollins on a ball screen. He showed against Banchero all the way to the half court line. It wasn't a switch. This is what we're seeing now. He showed on that ball screen. He's going to get back to his own. Bobby Portis is going to wait on Banchero. And then Banchero makes a nice in and out move. But here's Brooke once again. As you talked about, Chris, second and third efforts defensively. Brooke Lopez, I think he may have gotten a piece of it. If he didn't, he definitely impacted the shot. He did block that. And so that's the kind of effort against a team you might see in the first round of the playoffs. The playoffs were today. This is the 4-5 matchup. So how important is that to establish all that right now against this team?
Well, it's a style of play. I mean, you know that Orlando is going to come out with high energy, and you have to match that energy, and that starts with extra efforts and hustle. What you're talking about on that Ryan Rollins play when he's running back, it's the sprint back. It's not a jog. It's not a loafing, you know, allow the skip pass to get there type of play. It's shutting off avenues, shutting off lanes, and the more the Bucks pile those up on a quarter-to-quarter basis on the defensive end, that's how you hold a team like Orlando to, what, under 100 on that game?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what happens. When you're given the extra effort, the dividends show up on the defensive end.
Yeah, and again, Ryan Wallace, that was a aggressive show on that screen, and he forced Ben Carroll all the way to the midcourt line, gave Bobby Portis a chance to kind of relocate and get back. And then this is just another great help play on the part of Brook Lopez. And this sends a message to Ben Carroll that, you know, despite how you did your first game back after being out 34 games, dropped 34 in the Bucks in 26 minutes down in Orlando a few days ago, this game the Bucks played him completely differently. All this. I mean, he's got Dame matched up against Dame, but look at the convergence, man. Look at the convergence. Talk about that, man.
Well, no, I mean, what I got out of this is Brook's ability to recover and can recover with quickness. Like, yeah, he does this on multiple occasions. Right there, he's kind of a step away from Banchero. You see him, like, get into the restricted area really quickly. He did it on another block on the other end. I think it was during the second half, but he does it on another one. He's beating the offensive player, in this case, Banchero, to the spot before he goes up. So, yeah. Being there before he goes up and having a 7'5 wingspan, I mean, you're in trouble. No man's land.
And just understanding that, hey, he's got Dame at a disadvantage. I'm here. No problem. I got it. You know, and that's the beauty, just recognizing that Ben Carroll's got almost like a dunk based on that defense.
And imagine and think about the like having a Lopez who on that clip, he stopped Anthony Black's penetration.
Yeah.
You know, he shadows right the there. Ball. He damn near gets a damn deflection off of the pass. And then he's quick enough with the wherewithal at 280 to go up and get that. That Brook Lopez is a unicorn type of talent on the defensive end. He doesn't get enough credit for everything that he's able to do.
That's a great point. He gets a lot of criticism for being older and slower, but man.
When
that read was quick and youthful.
No, this is it. This is what I was talking about. You see how quickly, so if we rewind this, you'll see how quickly Brook is able to get in the restricted area, almost out of the restricted area. Watch this. 1-2. You see how those two big steps he takes and then he's up? Like, that's quickness. That's a sense of awareness. That's like being a veteran. Like, I'm going to get to the spot and beat you up to the summit before you're able to get there. Were you on this call?
Yeah, you're great.
You said
we had this game, but to your point, he was trying to cleanse himself, get out of that 2.9 area. He's trying to cleanse. Then he realizes that Banchero's got Taurean Prince in a bad way, and like you say, this recovery, that quick 1-2 right left. Watch this. Right left up. Not happening. Catch him at the rim. You're not dunking on us. Boom.
Last point, why is that quick 1-2 so important in this scenario? Because if you don't get a good base to jump, you're going to be dunked on and posterized.
Here, District, Brandon Jennings, good stuff. Got a chance to talk about softness and some of the controversy surrounding Jason Tatum and all that good stuff.
Yes, sir.
A lot of great insights. And I like when he talked about going to the Portland Coliseum against Dame with that Milwaukee Red uniform on.
He had some big games. Still humble about it.
But see, that's L.A., though. See, we're not going to brag particularly in situations like that. But we're going to get our just due, too. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to tell you that when I served Larry Bird, Bernard King, Dr. J, and all those guys in my era, I'm going to tell you about it. And speaking of which... the last thing, Sean Farnham, your teammate at UCLA, one of the best college studio analysts and in-game broadcasters around, they were talking bloodlines. And he had some great things to say about you, man, in terms of, being the son of an NBA guy, blah, blah, blah. But he talked about all these guys that had all the hoopla and all the hype that they had on that UCLA team back in those days when they needed a bucket. They went to Stadi Loco. Right?
Man. I'm just, thankful for my teammates, man. They always were passing the ball. Without them, it never would have happened.
Whatever, man.
Right.
The fake humility. Well, quick story.
No, this is a true story, too, about our conversation, because you've been talking about Sidney Wicks. I want to tell them about Washington State, because we talked earlier, like, that day. So it was probably, like, right before my shoot-around, we talked about it. Go ahead.
Well, and we'll find the clip and then post that clip for you guys too. But Chris complained to me his senior year about never getting to take the last second shot. Or I asked him, why come you never take a last second shot? Well, Coach Herrick Steve Lavin is always designing a play for
Toby
or JR, Baron, blah, blah, blah. I said, man, let me tell you a story about Sidney Wicks. Sidney Wicks, when he was at UCLA, they played against Oregon, I believe, maybe Oregon State. I forget which one. But they're playing in Poly Pavilion, one of the Oregon schools. And it's a tie ball game. He's got the ball near the top of the key. He starts dribbling. The guard comes over to get the ball from him, Henry Bibby. He waves him off. Another guard comes over, Kenny Booker. He waves him off. Sidney waits until 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, pull up 17-foot jumper at the right elbow. Swish. Game. He wins the game. So I told Chris that story. So I'm working with the Sonics at this point. I'm on the road. UCLA's playing Washington State. And so I hurry back to my hotel, the Residence Inn on Lake Union. I run up to my room. The game's about to end. It's you know, I'm rushing. I can't find it on my car radio. I turn on the radio in the room. It's in Washington State, Seattle. So I figured there's some kind of station that might carry it. So I find the game. And it's like 10, 15 seconds left. And the great Chris Roberts, my former broadcast partner, is on the call. And he's talking about how the game is tied, I believe. And he's talking how the game is tied. It's 12 seconds left. Chris Johnson has the ball right side, about 20 feet away from the basket. Baron Davis comes over. Chris waves him off. Toby Bailey comes over. Chris waves him off. Chris is going to take the shot. 3, 2, 1. Chris gives a little shake, a little Kobe kind of shake, pulls up for, was that a three-pointer? It was a
deep three.
Tie game, deep three, bottom. And man, just went, and I'm dancing around the room because he had done that exact same thing that I had told him about earlier that day that Sidney Wicks had done in a game. He pulled it off. And I'll never forget this when Steve Lavin was asked about you taking that shot and waving off Baron, waving off JR, waving off Toby. He's like, a three-pointer. Game tied. Exactly what we were looking for. Kind of sarcastic, but I'm like, hey, whatever, man.
Last thing on that to put a capper, I saw Tim Gergovich, who we've been talking about on this podcast,
yeah,
like after that season doing like a pre-draft workout I had, and he talked about that shot, about how he was in the stands, Dad, watching that game. He saw me do that. Wow. He was like, it was one of the, he was like, man, that was some impressive stuff.
Yeah, that's
like impressive. He couldn't believe it. Like, yeah, but
bloodlines, so. Baby, bloodlines, passing it on down, man. And just to hear that, to just be in a position where I could hear that those final 12 seconds live from Chris Roberts, and I'm like, oh boy, he's gonna do the Sidney Wicks. And
then what a life
shot, man. I was around that room. Yeah.
What a life. What a life.
Hey, Johnson. I was dancing, man. I was dancing, going crazy. Anyway. All right, man. That's enough of us. Here, District. Fantastic, boys. What a show. We've always got some. We're always entertaining, if nothing else. And, we thank you all for joining us. And check us out next week on the Here District.
Peace.
This has been a Bucks Plus audio production.